The U.S. House this morning passed a resolution laying out the next steps in the impeachment process of President Trump.
On this vote, the yeas are 232. The nays are 196. The resolution is adopted without objection. The motion to reconsider is laid upon the table.
No Republicans voted for the resolution. Two Democrats voted against it. The move gives House Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff the power to conduct open hearings and lets President Trump and his lawyers cross-examine witnesses. After the vote, Trump tweeted, quote, the greatest witch hunt in American history. Meanwhile, more witnesses are testifying behind closed doors about whether Trump improperly pressured Ukraine to conduct investigations that would benefit him politically. Charlie Jacobs is an associate professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. He teaches courses on constitutional law. Charlie, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having us, Rob.
Also with us, Lowell Barrington is an associate professor and chair of the Marquette University Political Science Department. He's an expert on post-communist politics, including Ukraine. Lowell, good to have you back, too.
Great to be back, Rob.
Charlie, let's start with you. What does this process look like now under this vote from the House today?
It looks very similar to what we saw during the Nixon impeachment process as well as the Clinton process. You know, what in both of those, there had been a lot of preliminary work done either by the Senate or by a special prosecutor. So there wasn't very much for the House to do. The House is grinding through some of that work right now, hence some of these more secretive committee hearings. But in essence, the same kind of process that's going to allow for the dissemination of the transcripts from those committee hearings will be available once they wrap up those investigations. Then we're going to have open hearings that will allow for Republicans to take a larger role in the process. And you're going to see the president's lawyers be able to inject themselves into the process as well. So what we're seeing really is a repetition of what the House has tried to do in the few modern impeachment processes that we've seen.
Charlie, Republicans have objected to the closed door meetings where a lot of this testimony has come before three committees, the Democratic and Republican members there. And even with this vote, they say that start taints the whole process. What do you make of that criticism?
You know, it's interesting because this process, the impeachment removal process that the Constitution provides, it kind of replicates what we see in the private sector where a grand jury will be impaneled to determine whether or not an indictment should be issued for an individual. And those are conducted in secret in part because we want to protect individuals who may be under suspicion for a crime. And so we sort of protect them from any invasion of privacy and those kinds of issues in case they aren't indicted. And in many respects, that's what's going on here, trying to protect the process and trying to ensure that those who are testifying, as well as those who might be under suspicion, don't have to face that kind of public scrutiny early. As soon as they feel comfortable with the fact that they're going to go to an open forum, all of this information is likely to be made available to the public. So it's hard to act in some untoward fashion when you know it's going to be projected to the public soon. Obviously, we'd like an open process, but there are reasons to keep a closed door here before they expose it to complete public view.
I want to give a listen to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi speaking here before today's vote.
This is a sad day. It's a sad day because nobody comes to Congress to impeach a president of the United States. No one. We come here to do the work, make the future better for our children, for America's future. We take an oath to protect and defend the Constitution, and that's what we cannot ignore, and we will not ignore when the president's behavior indicates that investigation, that inquiry is necessary.
And Lowell, that behavior she just referred to involves the president's interactions mainly with Ukraine and the leadership of that country. What are some of the key points of what we've seen from the president publicly and in the testimony that we've heard about?
Well, I was just thinking today that really the investigation's only gone now for about 3 weeks and has uncovered quite a bit. And I think that as I was kind of thinking about the key actors in this so far, obviously, we need to not forget the whistleblower. I mean, this is the most important person in that we're not here right now if it were not for that complaint that was filed. I think there's some interesting things that people have corroborated each other's testimony in a lot of ways from what we've heard from people in general ways afterwards and what we've seen in their released opening statements. But there's also different things that each one of them brought. I thought Maria Ivanovich's testimony was actually quite important, the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine who was removed. And one of the things about that was to kind of show this wasn't a whim. This wasn't just a phone call. This was a really long thought out and kind of process of actions involving Ukraine to enable Rudy Giuliani and others to work to kind of put pressure on the Ukrainian government. I think Fiona Hill is sort of a sneaky important testimony. She was the former Russia expert on the National Security Council because she was the one that really brought up John Bolton, and I think he's going to be a very interesting figure down the road. I think Gordon Sondland was important for the Republicans. I think he made an argument that, yes, this maybe wasn't the greatest thing to happen, but he did not think there was any kind of quid pro quo, and the president told him there wasn't. I think the last the two people testifying over the last week, Bill Taylor, who testified on the 22nd, the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, who'd been back at the request of Mike Pompeo to go back to Ukraine. I mean, his testimony is really a turning point. I think it from what we've heard from people, again, with reporting on what went on behind closed doors, which you have to, take with a grain of salt. But that this was a turning point, and even Republicans in the room realized this is not a good set of facts that are coming out for the president. And then I think Alexander Vindman was really important the other day on October 29th. The Army Lieutenant Colonel, he's a decorated war veteran, he comes to testify under oath in his dress uniform. And I think that one of the things about that was not only really important in how he corroborated other things, but just the kind of questioning of his patriotism, I think, was too much for some people even on the right. And you saw some people actually kind of defending him against criticism. So I think that's another one of the important sort of moments recently.
Talking to Lowell Barrington from Marquette University, Charlie Jacobs from St. Norbert College with the latest on the impeachment inquiry. Big vote today in the House, moving it forward to a public stage. I want to give a listen to Republican Jim Jordan, ranking Republican on the House Oversight and Reform Committee. He also, like Pelosi, called today sad. Here he is after the vote, saying the president didn't do anything wrong.
There is no conditions in the transcript. There's no quid pro quo in the transcript. Even the day after the call came out, Democratic chairmen were saying, well, there's no quid pro quo there, but we're going to keep on doing what they've been putting our country through. Second, the two individuals on the call both have said, President Trump, President Zelensky, have both said there was no pressure, no pushing, nothing. Third, the Ukrainians didn't know aid had been held up at the time of the phone call. And fourth and most important, what action did they take? What action did President Zelensky take or the Ukrainians take to ever free up the aid that was held up? They did nothing. No statement, no announcement of any type of event. Those facts have never changed, will never change, but they don't care.
Lowell, is it that black and white?
Well, there's a lot that he just said there. I think the idea that it's sort of just a phone call and nothing on the phone call was a problem is not the strongest argument, because, again, this isn't just about the phone call. The phone call put things into initial relief, but there is a lot of evidence that has come out behind closed doors that I suspect when we see those transcripts from the depositions, we will see, in fact, that there was a lot of information about things beyond a phone call. I think that, I do want to say that there's a Republican argument here that we have to take really seriously, and it is that, maybe the president shouldn't have done this the way he did, but it just doesn't rise to the level of impeachment and removal. And, I personally disagree with that. I think it is an abuse of power for personal political gain. I don't think you have to have the other side being aware that all the pieces had fallen into place for it to be something we would not want a president to do for our sake, of our reputation, of our country, and our national security. If I rob someone's house, I've committed a crime if they, haven't figured out yet that I've stolen something. I mean, the issue is not so much that Ukraine knew or didn't know at a certain point or what they did. It was the effort to get them to do this that's the problem. And I think that's something that we need to keep in mind going forward.
And Charlie, what are you watching for now as this public process goes forward and Democrats move to presumably draft articles of impeachment?
I'm going to agree with Professor Barrington, because part of this, I think, that's going on is that the Republicans are trying to find an argument, and they had latched on to process. Well, now the process is going to be more favorable towards President Trump as well as the Republicans in the way in which they can engage. And so they've lost that argument, and now they have to really grapple with the substantive issues. So what we're, I think, going to see is an argument about, as exactly Professor Barrington is suggesting, what is an impeachable offense? So it's going to get down to a more granular level about, does this actually count? And it's difficult, because in contemporary politics, I think we reflect on impeachment and removal as a very criminal type of a process. But, you know, Alexander Hamilton wrote right at the founding that really the kind of offenses that we're thinking about is the misconduct of public men. That's how he wrote it. This idea that we violated the public trust, and that's what the president or the vice president or any other impeachable official has done. And that's actually a rather low bar, but it's a political bar. And so what we're going to have to look for is how we're going to frame this debate about whether or not this conduct and how it's been portrayed by witnesses as well as the transcript, whether or not that rises to the level of that bar, and whether or not we can lower it from that argument we have about criminal activity that might be involved here.
We're talking about today's vote by the U.S. House to formalize the impeachment inquiry into President Trump. Lowell Barrington and Charlie Jacobs are with us from Marquette University and St. Norbert College, respectively. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about the House voting to begin a public stage of this impeachment inquiry process? Are you glad Democrats are pressing ahead with it, or do you think they should drop it? What questions do you have for our guests about President Trump's phone call and the buildup to that, the relationship with Ukraine, the whistleblower, the impeachment proceedings? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about today's vote by the U.S. House to lay out the next steps in the impeachment investigation into President Trump. Charlie Jacobs is with us from St. Norbert College, Lowell Barrington from Marquette University, and you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your reactions, and questions on impeachment. 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Charlie is with us in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I guess my question for your guests would be the following. You know, during the Obama administration, Lois Lerner obviously did something maybe not perfect in her affecting the civil rights of a rival political party. And I look at the person today who testified in the meetings and said he was in on the phone call, and yet he didn't think anything illegal happened. Aren't we really kind of dealing with an ambiguous area, in that while these the impeachment inquiry should continue, it should be fair to both sides, and then really get down to narrowing what is allowed and not allowed by our chief executive?
Charlie, thanks for the call. Charlie Jacobs?
I mean, it's a good point, because what we have to recognize is, as I just mentioned, this is a political process. It's not a legal process. And so we have to rely on the members of Congress to evaluate for us what they believe is an impeachable offense. And the recourse that we have as citizens is if we perceive that the House of Representatives is conducting an unfair investigation, is not providing due process for the president, and is in essence railroading the executive, then we turn to the polls and we can throw those people out of office and replace them with those who are going to treat the president with more fairness and more equity. So that's the process. Unfortunately, only through public opinion polls and our reaching out to our representatives can we maybe influence them in the way they're going to behave. Once this horse is out of the barn, they're probably going to pursue it as far as they go, and they have to make a decision about any action by an individual within the executive branch about whether or not their activities are appropriate or inappropriate and rise to the level where we have to proceed in this manner.
Thanks for that call, Charlie. We'll go to Gene now in Richland Center. Gene, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. My question, kind of comment, is with Joe Biden, you have him on video kind of bragging in a way about while he was vice president, getting rid of, or, you know, pressing Ukraine to get rid of someone that was against him, or not necessarily him, but what his son was involved with and everything. So how is it okay for him to do it and then Trump not to do? Why is there a double standard here?
Gene, thanks a lot for the call. He's talking about the prosecutor in Ukraine, who I believe the concern was that he wasn't pursuing corruption cases enough. Lowell, let's bring you in on this one.
Yeah, and I appreciate the caller's comment, and I think both the callers so far, it's nice to have people kind of come in with some facts and questions, and I think that's great. The situation with what Joe Biden was talking about is we actually are now on our sort of third Ukrainian prosecutor general since the initial conversations about what Joe Biden had been talking about back then. But the one that he was commenting on, Viktor Shokin, was someone, as you said, Rob, that actually was ousted in 2016, partly because of pressure from the U.S., but there was pressure on Ukraine from all over the world, including a lot of Europe, on Poroshenko, the president at the time, to fire Shokin. And it was, you're right, precisely because he was not prosecuting instances of corruption by political elites in the country. And in fact, I think that, you know, the thing that Biden was talking about there is, you know, we were really working on corruption as in a general way. I think linking it to this case, therefore, is a little awkward, although I think it's fair to say, you know, we were certainly influencing domestic things in Ukraine there and putting pressure on them to do that. So isn't that the same thing? The key difference is the difference between what kind of corruption people were worried about. If the administration had a track record over the last couple of years of really working on the issue of corruption around the world, and even in a country like Ukraine, really pushing them in general on political and economic corruption at high levels across different parts of the Ukrainian government where there is plenty of corruption. If that had been the focus, I think the link would be a little more reasonable, but that's not been the focus. There was really two specific things that they've asked to be investigated. One is this sort of conspiracy theory about Ukraine's involvement in the 2016 election, which would then lessen the impact somewhat, I guess, in people's minds about Russia's impact on the 2016 election. And the second is the, you know, examination of the particular company that Hunter Biden was involved in, Burisma, which again is being chosen specifically because that then creates a kind of taint for Joe Biden. So I think it's fair to bring it up. I don't see them really as anything close to equal situations, though.
Gene, thanks for that call. We're talking about impeachment and Ukrainian news and the testimony that's been coming out. We've got Lowell Barrington from Marquette University and Charlie Jacobs with us. Back to your calls now. Jim is with us in Rice Lake. Jim, hello.
Hi, I just want to share a story. In August of 1974, I was a political page for Senator Edward W. Brooks of Massachusetts. And it was a really different political time because there were these things called liberal Republicans and these things called conservative Democrats. And I feel today we've parked ourselves into such corners that Donald Trump has succeeded in almost creating a political nihilism where facts don't matter. I'd be interested in your guest commentary on that.
Jim, thanks for the call. Let's throw that one to you, Charlie. And that polarization and partisanship came before Donald Trump was even running for president, right?
Yeah, but you know, Jim raises a really interesting point. If you look back at the Nixon impeachment vote, it was 410-4. If you look at Clinton's vote, it was 258-176, and there were 31 Democrats who voted for impeachment. And, you know, we still had some Southern Democrats hanging on, just as Jim suggested, who were typically more conservative than most of their colleagues on the left side of the aisle. You know, the Trump vote here was 232-196. Two D's voted no, and there was unanimity in voting no from the Republican Party. So we really have seen that political division ideologically. Now, whether or not Trump himself is sort of the causal factor for this kind of division, polarization has been creeping ever larger over the last decade or so. So he just may be one of the many results of this division that we've seen nationwide over time. But certainly we're seeing it encapsulated in this event. And I think Jim's insights are really valuable.
Jim, thanks a lot for sharing that firsthand perspective on Watergate. Just a couple minutes left now. Lowell, I want to hear what you are watching for next when it comes to what we know and don't know about Ukraine, President Trump, and the various intermediaries there.
Well, I think on the Ukrainian side, I think there's a lot of people in the U.S. thinking or hoping that we're going to hear from Ukrainian officials. That seems pretty unlikely. The president has really avoided answering questions. He's been getting asked from reporters about what he thinks about what's going on in the United States right now. And the foreign minister made a pretty strong statement yesterday, I think, about, you know, yes, they'll show up if they're really summoned to go and testify, but they really don't want to interfere in what they see as a kind of domestic U.S. incident. In terms of who's up next, I mean, this is the really fascinating part of, you know, what Professor Jacobs had talked about the switch to this more public process, because some of these people might still be testifying behind closed doors first and then be brought up publicly. But there's going to be some big fights to even get them there. And that's, you know, Mick Mulvaney, that's Rick Perry, certainly John Bolton has already been subpoenaed to testify. And then, you know, the interesting scenario of Rudy Giuliani under oath for everyone to watch would be a spectacle probably for the history books.
And Charlie, what are you watching for next?
I'm watching the polls because, you know, we saw a dramatic shift once the Ukrainian issues became much more public and gained traction among the media. I mean, we've seen a 12-point shift in independent support for impeachment. We've seen a 12-point shift for Democrats, a slight 1.5% or so Republican shift. But I think that the Democrats felt free in their vote today because of this kind of public support. It'll be interesting to see, as Professor Barrington notes, when this becomes public, does it maintain that traction with the public? Are they convinced more, less? What are they going to do when they hear the information firsthand?
Charlie, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
And Lowell, thanks for being with us again.
Thank you, Rob.
We've been talking to Charlie Jacobs, Associate Professor of Political Science at St. Norbert College in De Pere, and Lowell Barrington, Associate Professor and Chair of the Marquette University Political Science Department. We talked with them about the impeachment process against President Trump, a big vote taken today in the U.S. House to advance that process and kick off a new stage that will include now public hearings and testimony, plus the latest on President Trump, his disputed phone call to Ukraine's president, and the efforts of Rudy Giuliani.